hold for just a minute for Councilmember Miller. But in the meantime, I will ask for AGP, see if they are ready to begin the meeting. Very good. So City Clerk Sims, have you reached out to Councilmember Miller? Do we expect her? Do we have any concerns?
As I know, she is on the road. So I'm not sure if she will be joining us for the closed session.
Gotcha. Okay, very good. Then let's go ahead and we will proceed, and we will anticipate that if she can join us, she will along the way. So I will go ahead and call to order our special council meeting of June 14th, 2021 at 5 p.m. It is still a virtual meeting, and in compliance with the state and county sheltered home orders, our meetings are being held by teleconference until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is available live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling in at 805-321-6639. We will hold our moment of silence and our flag salute until our regularly scheduled meeting. So I will turn to our city clerk for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Miller. I do not show on as yet. Councilmember Robert?
Here.
Councilmember Rushing?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Here.
Mayor Lee?
Here. Very good. So we do have a quorum, so we will go ahead and proceed. And this will be a moment where we do have public comments. During this time, the council will allow public communications compliance. With the Brown Act, we cannot take any actions on the agenda this evening, but I'll turn to our city clerk and see if there is any members of the public on the line for our special meeting.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good, which is why I started with the first line and ended with the last line, and it made no sense when I read it back in my brain. But I've opened public comment and I'll close public comment. But we do have a closed session this evening, so I will ask our city attorney to introduce the closed session, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You're about to convene in a closed session with the Conference of Labor Negotiators pursuant to Government Code 54957.6. Agency negotiators are Special Counsel Jay Johnson, City Manager Matthew Bronson, Administrative Service Director Danielle Purcell, Finance Manager Annette Munoz, and Management Analyst Human Resources Carla Maddox. The representative employee group is Service Employees International Union, Local 620.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Hale. And just for to ensure that we don't have any public comment, or if we do, they get an opportunity to speak, I'll turn it over to our city clerk and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on the closed session item.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public comment on the closed session item and ask those not involved with the closed session to leave this virtual meeting. And we will. O'clock. I will go ahead and call to order our regular council meeting. Excuse me, I apologize. I'm going to hold off on calling to order our regular council meeting because we are going to return from our closed session meeting that we had at 5 o'clock. And I'm going to turn it over to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, to do a report out of that closed session, please.
Thank you, Mayor. We've reconvened into open session, and closed session that we're coming from is pursuant to Government Code 54957.6 in terms of labor negotiations. There are no reportable actions for this evening.
Very good. Thank you, sir. So we will go ahead and adjourn that 5 o'clock special meeting, and then that'll bring us to our regular meeting of the City Council at 6 p.m. on Monday, June 14th, 2021. This is our call to order, and in compliance with the state and county sheltered home orders, meetings are being held by teleconference only until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on channel 20 and is available live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. www.meeting-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling in at 805-321-6639, and those phone lines are open. So before we do our moment of silence this evening, I do want to acknowledge two things, one very close to home and one on a national level. The one on the national level is the country is nearing, if not have already surpassed, 600,000 related deaths due to COVID-19. And as the state continues to proceed into its opening, I think it's a good opportunity to take a moment of silence for all those families who have been impacted in whatever fashion. And then much closer to home is the community did lose someone who had made it to 101 and 11 months, and that was Frosty. So Mr. Forrest Frost, otherwise known to family and friends as Frosty, did pass away in late May, and his services were just over this weekend. So before we have a moment of silence, I'll turn it over to Councilmember Robert if he wanted to share anything about Frosty.
One moment. My couldn't get my mute off. Yeah, Frosty was a neighbor, a very close friend of Anita and mine, and just a man of integrity. He was one of the last, the greatest generations, served in World War II, a Navy vet, and just a man of honor. He did many, many years of service for the community. He will be missed dearly. He had a great life all the way up to the end. He did not suffer, and we just love him to death, and just going to miss him very much. So to Connie, his daughter, who lives close by and was able to spend a few years with him at the end there, very close, and she'll miss him dearly as well. So, yes, thank you.
Very good. Now, so with that, if you'd all join us in a moment of silence, please. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in that moment of silence. And now it is my honor to turn to our flag salute, where tonight we have Zach Lamb doing our flag salute for us. And he is 11 years old and in the sixth grade at Fairgrove Elementary School. Zach enjoys Boy Scouts, riding his quad, and the 4-H barbecue group and 4-H, where he is raising and shadowing a hog for eventual sale at the Santa Barbara County Fair. So Zach, whose mom, is Tammy Johns, who's a Grover Beach employee with the Parks and Rec Department. The floor is yours to do the flag salute for us, young man.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Two.
Thank you very much, sir. We appreciate that. We appreciate you being here tonight, and thank you for all your activities in the community. So with that, I'll turn it over to our city clerk for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Miller appears to still be absent. Councilmember Robert?
Here.
Councilmember Rushing?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Here.
Mayor Lee.
Here. Very good. So we do have a quorum, and so we will proceed with the agenda, which then does take us to our closed session announcements. I know we had one at the very top of this, but I did want to give our city attorney an opportunity to report on any other closed sessions that we have not already reported on.
We have none at this time.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and take us to our agenda review, where at this time the council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests about any changes in the order of the day. So is there any members of the council or staff that want to make any changes to the order? Seeing no one unmute themselves, I'll go ahead and accept a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Second was by Councilmember Roberts. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. We will proceed with the agenda as presented, which takes us to our ceremonial calendar, where this evening we do have a proclamation for Juneteenth Day, which is June 19th, 2021. And I'll go ahead and proceed with the proclamation of the Grove Beach City Council designating Saturday, June 19th, 2021 as Juneteenth Day. So whereas since June 19th, 1865, the American celebration known as Juneteenth has historically been observed at the end of the institution of slavery in our great nation. And whereas Juneteenth embodies the indomitable human spirit of the past, the present, and all time. And whereas the celebration of Juneteenth gives us all an opportunity to rededicate ourselves to the true American spirit and to strive for a more perfect union. And whereas we are citizens who wish to secure the blessings of freedom, justice, and equality for all in this great country of ours. And whereas the collaboration of community-based organizations, faith-based organizations, local businesses, and local government demonstrates a shared commitment to being a part of the solution and acknowledging the importance of strength through unity. So now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim the third Saturday of June 2021 as Juneteenth Day and recommends that all citizens of the City of Grover Beach join in recognizing the importance of this day. And with that, I'll bring it back to Ms. Paula Carr, who's here to accept the proclamation and see if she has any comments she wants to share.
Yes, Mayor Lee, I want to thank you and fellow council members on behalf of the San Luis Obispo County branch of the NAACP for acknowledging this national Juneteenth celebration, which has been going on for a very long time, even though it's perhaps new to many of us in this community. As you mentioned, it does commemorate the reading of the Emancipation Proclamation. This was in Galveston, Texas, and it was at that time sort of the last part of what was then the nation to know that that was happening, that emancipation had been agreed upon and that the slaves were free. And this action of the proclamation is listed under ceremonial, and it is. It's an important ceremony, and it's also more than merely symbolic because it reminds us of our essential shared humanity. Just a few moments ago, the young Boy Scout recited those words, with liberty and justice for all. And so it's very much a part of the fabric of our national aspiration for how we should behave towards one another as fellow citizens of this country. We invite you to become a member of NAACP if you are not already. And because the celebration is being held this coming weekend on Friday and Saturday, please take a look at our website, which is NAACPSLOCTY@gmail.org. And I really want to thank you, extend our sincere thanks for this. It's an important marker in our national history, and it means a great deal to our local San Luis Obispo branch. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Carr. Let's see if there's any members of the council that might have a question for you. Looks like I see Councilmember Bright moving towards the microphone, but perhaps not. So if not, if you can just repeat the website where people can learn more information about the ceremonies this weekend.
Yes, thank you. You know, there are events that are going to be scheduled on Friday evening and also on Saturday evening, which is the actual Juneteenth day. And you can learn more about it at NAACP, which is NAACP. SLOCTY@gmail.org. And we thank you for helping us make this public, and we hope we have many people who get to take part this year. Thank you again, Mr. Mayor.
Very good. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, and good luck with the events over the weekend. So that will conclude our ceremonial calendar. We don't have a presentation calendar this evening, so that does take us to our public comments, where at this time the council will allow public communication with additional communication, if necessary, allowed after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on the agenda. So let me turn to our city clerk and see if we have any members of the public that want to speak under public communication.
Yes, we have Joshua Medrano.
Very good. Good evening, Joshua.
Good evening, Mayor and esteemed council. Appreciate your time this evening. I want to just continue to bring to light the Central Coast Blue Project, which is a fantastic regional public works project that will be one of the largest projects undertaken by Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, and Arroyo Grande. And I want to thank all of you right now for unanimously supporting local hire through a community workforce agreement on the Central Coast Blue Project. We appreciate the support. The community appreciates your support. And it is vital that a binding local hire provision be put into place to ensure that Grover Beach residents and other SLO County workers are used on this project, keeping those jobs here, local, with those people, using local workers to keep our tax dollars local and providing a career path for Grover Beach residents to achieve a career pathway with a local head of household job with benefits. The Central Coast Blue Project will be bound by prevailing wage, so there will be no additional labor costs to utilizing our local workforce to build the project through a community workforce agreement. A community workforce agreement is currently being used with the San Luis Obispo Wastewater Treatment Facility project, and over 80% of the workers on that $100-plus million project live in San Luis Obispo County. And the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District is also using a similar agreement on their redundancy project. You don't have to look far for examples. The Arroyo Grande City Council has also recently voted unanimously in support of a CWA on the Central Coast Blue Project, joining all of you on this esteemed council for a collective 9-0 in favor of using a community workforce agreement on the Central Coast Blue Project. We want to thank you collectively, the building trades, representing over 7,500 hardworking men and women of our local areas, for supporting the use of a local workers on the Central Coast Blue Project, and continue to urge you all to work with the City of Arroyo Grande and the City of Pismo Beach to ensure that local workers, including workers that live in your area, are prioritized and put to work on the Central Coast Blue Project, even if the lowest bidder is from outside the area. Thank you very much, Council. We appreciate you and everybody at Grover Beach. Have a great evening.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. So I'll turn to our city clerk and see if there's any other members under public comment this evening.
Yes, we have Janice Bradley.
Good evening, Ms. Bradley.
Good evening. So I haven't done this before, so do I just say what you, I want to say?
Yep, you can start anytime. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. All right. Good evening, Grover Beach City Council and Mayor. We are saddened and disappointed that the Grover Beach City Council has decided to display the LGBTQ or Pride flag on our City Hall, along with the flag of the United States of America and the California state flag. We believe that this action that the Grover Beach City Council has taken to display the Pride flag on the City Hall goes against the best interest of our community and does not represent the majority of our citizens. You claim in your proclamation that this council is, quote, striving to build a stronger, better state and nation for all residents. This action that you have taken results in a larger divide in our community and does not unify it. It appears the City Council has chosen to elevate one group that promotes tribalism and not one nation under God, as our founders of this country did. Why has this group been selected and not any other group? Is this not a form of discrimination towards other people in our community? Displaying this flag demonstrates racism towards other groups in our community, state, and country. Why does the City Council not spend more time and demonstrate more efforts towards unifying our citizens, but instead has opted to divide? Why not hang a flag for any special interest groups that have a flag? The Grover Beach City Council has selected one group to draw attention to that does not represent the majority of our residents in our community. The Grover Beach Proclamation also states that the City Council would like, quote, to ensure equality and respect for all. In flying this flag to demonstrate our city's commitment in creating a safe, inclusive society for all, are you not, in fact, causing segregation? We are offended and deeply troubled by the actions of the Grover Beach City Council to display the LGBTQ flag. What people choose to do in their own private bedrooms should not be advertised and applauded over any other sexual preference. Why do we even need to draw attention to this or any other lifestyle? All people are created equal and should be treated equally with the same level of love and respect that they all deserve, no matter what race, origin, sexual preference, or ethnicity they are. To elevate one above another is just wrong. Please remember that voters do not forget the things you have said and done. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you for your comments. Let's see if there's anyone else on the line who wants to speak under public communications this evening.
No, we have no one else on the line.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close. Excuse me. We'll go ahead and close public comment. Bring it back to the council. So, just a quick comment. Appreciate Mr. Medrano's comments about CCB. I believe there is some further discussions that could be ongoing, but appreciate him keeping that in front of our attention. And then with regards to Ms. Bradley, so I appreciate the opportunity for her to speak this evening, which is exactly in keeping with the intent of the Constitution, but it is also the opportunity for equality and the pride flag, in my opinion, I won't speak for the rest of the council, but in my opinion, speaks so much more than just to sexual orientation. It speaks to all of us as human beings. It speaks to equality. It speaks to anti-discrimination. So with that, I will go ahead and close public communications, bring it back to the consent agenda for a number of following routine items being listed below as are scheduled for consideration as a group. And these recommendations are noted on the agenda in parentheses. Let's see if there's any members of the council that have any questions on an item on the consent calendar this evening. Seeing no microphones come off, I will go ahead and just kind of make a request that based upon the, I'll call it the ever fluid COVID-19 update, was going to have the city manager provide a quick moment before we take the consent agenda as a whole. So before the city manager does that, let me turn to our city clerk and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on the consent agenda. If so, please call in at 805-321-6639. So I'll turn it over to our city clerk.
We have no one on the line for public comment. Ken with the Housing Authority is on the line. Should there be any questions for number five?
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comments. Or actually, before I do that, let's see if anyone has any questions on item number five, which is an authorization to amend the exclusive negotiating rights agreement for the city-owned Cleaver Property Affordable Housing Project. Before we let Ken go. Seeing no microphones come active, I will go ahead and close public comment. Thank Ken for being here this evening and turn it over to our city manager for a quick update on the COVID-19 response staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council member. Just a brief update to the council. Three items I'll highlight. The first is last week, the county did move to the yellow tier, which is the lowest of the four tiers under the state's blueprint for a safer economy. That does reflect the number of new cases per 100,000 population, the positivity rate, and led to further reopening and access for occupancy. However, all that is really a moot point because tomorrow, June 15th, is when the state of California is releasing the remaining restrictions under the blueprint for a safer economy. In fact, the blueprint is now going to be put on the shelf effective June 15th, which is a tremendous step for all of us, and it did not just happen overnight. We all know that it happened because of the diligence of our community in following face covering requirements and keeping distance and sanitation in mind, and most of all, getting vaccinated. That is the single biggest way for us to get to the end of the pandemic, and we've achieved that as a community. We still need to increase our vaccination rate as a community overall, but we're making great progress. And now tomorrow we'll be able to celebrate the lifting of the remaining restrictions as a state and be able to get back to more of what we love to do as a community. So that's item number one. Item two is just to highlight that our Buy Local program, which is tied into COVID-19, is just continuing to be very, very successful. To date, we've generated $160,000 of documented local spending at our businesses in Grover Beach, including $121,000 in customer spending that has been leveraged by city spending for gift cards. We still have another 6 weeks to go, and you'll hear at the next council meeting a final big push to try to get to $200,000 in documented local spending to help support our business community. And again, I want to thank the Chamber for their great work in partnering with us on this. And lastly, we are open for business, open for walk-in business at City Hall, other city facilities. We are expanding our hours next week. Given the release of state restrictions, we'll have what we call summer hours because many of our employees still have childcare needs, daycare needs, and have care needs as well. So we'll be easing back into our schedule, offering full day walk-up service on a couple days a week and then half days other days. We'll be sharing this information on social media later this week to let the public know. But again, it's a big step forward for us to be able to resume more normal activities. Thank you, Council.
Very good. Let's see if there's any questions for Mr. Bronson on the COVID update. Very good. Not seeing any microphones go live. We are prepared. Is someone prepared to make a motion on the consent agenda?
I will. I make a motion that we accept the consent agenda items 2 through 6 and we approve them as presented.
I'll second that.
Very good. We have a motion and a second. Any other comments? If not, Madam City Clerk, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller is absent. Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Mayor Lee.
Yes, very good. So we have an approved consent agenda this evening. So that will take us into our public hearings. And if anyone wants to make a comment on any item on the agenda this evening, please call in at 805-321-6639. And with that, we will introduce the fiscal year 2021-22 and fiscal year 22-23 proposed budget, as well as the fiscal year 21-26 capital improvement program. So I will turn to our Administrative Services Director, Purcell, for the beginning of the presentation, unless Mr. Bronson, you wanted to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just very briefly, I am delighted to officially kick off the formal presentation of the fiscal year 21-23 proposed budget to the council. This is really the culmination of 6 months of hard work by the council and by staff in creating a budget to reflect community needs, the vision of your council, and to connect priorities to resources and ultimately achievements. I'm delighted to introduce Deanne, who has been our champion in our budget process, and have her be able to walk through the presentation this evening. Deanne.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson, and good evening, Mayor and Council. First of all, I'd like to take a look at our overall budget outlook. For the current year, we're projecting a general fund to end the year with a healthy surplus of about $688,000 and $4.5 million in reserves. Looking at our proposed 2-year, we're looking at a balanced budget that reflects strength of local economy coming out of the pandemic. It addresses community needs in alignment with council goals. And the general fund includes CIP contributions of $2.1 million in fiscal year 22 and $2.3 million in fiscal year 23. Now that compares to a $300,000 contribution in the current year. So most of this we can attribute to the sales tax and Measure F20 that was passed back in November of 2020. I'd like to highlight some of our accomplishments. There's a lot of accomplishments for the city this year. We'll start with the street repairs. Over 50% of the local streets have been improved through Measure K14 funding. Other infrastructure improvements include new water lines and sewer lines, sidewalks, and ADA corner ramps. Park improvements, the council adopted the Ramona Park Master Plan, and approved a new playground at 16th Street Park that's being constructed as we speak. Economic development, we've continued to partnership with the Chamber on economic development services, including business retention and attraction. The city's housing element was updated to accommodate low and very low income units. And public safety filled vacant positions for police officers and a commander. And finally, public art, we hired local artists to install vibrant and diverse artwork on the city-owned controller cabinets along West Grand Avenue. And we've highlighted those in our budget document this year. Council goal setting. In February, there was a council goal setting workshop where three priority categories were identified. That included major city goals, other important goals, and address as resources permit. On March 8th, the council adopted those goals for fiscal year 2021 through 23. And they included major city goals, which is the highest priority goals for the city in the next 2 years. And they include economic development, housing and homelessness, public safety, and street improvements. And then our other important goals include building and facility improvements, city beautification and public art, and community engagement. Also in pedestrian and bicycle safety. And then as addresses resources permit, environmental sustainability and code compliance, recreation and community programs. Looking at our proposed budget, the total revenue budget for all funds for fiscal year 21-22 of $36.2 million. Our biggest revenues come from our tax revenues, which make up about 40% of our budget for the all funds. That's $14.5 million. Use of reserves is about $6.4 million. And that's most of it's from the bond proceeds for Measure K to repair the streets. The transfers in of $4.8 million make up 13% of our budget. And charges for current services, $6.6 million, or 18% of the all funds revenue budget. And then other agencies, $3.3 million, or 9% of the budget. And included in the other agencies is that ARPA funding that we'll talk about a little bit later. The $36.2 million budget for all funds expenditures is comprised mostly of the general fund, which makes up 52% or 18.68% of the all funds expenditures. And a large emphasis is on the capital improvement program of $9.7 million or 27% of the city's total budget, followed by enterprise funds, about $5.2 million or 14% of the budget, and then special revenue funds make up about $2.7 million or 7% of this budget. In fiscal year 22-23, this is the second year of this proposed budget. We're looking at all funds revenue of about $32.69 million. Again, tax revenues make up 46% of this budget, followed by charges for current services, 21% or $6.8 million. Transfers in, $3.7 million or 12% of the budget. Use of reserves, $3.7 million. And then other agencies, 2.7 or 8% of this all funds revenue budget. Expenditures, again, general fund is making up 56% of the fiscal year 22-23 all funds expenditure budget. And then capital improvement program makes up 24% or $7.9 million of this budget. Enterprise funds, 4.9 or 15%. And then finally, special revenue of 1.5 or 5% of this all funds expenditure budget. Focusing on the general fund only, the top three revenues make up $13 million or 70% of the general fund budget. Sales tax, which is now the city's largest revenue source, is at $5.45 million. We talked a little few slides ago. This mainly is due to the Measure F20 that was sales tax measure that was passed in November. Increased our sales tax by $2.1 million in fiscal year 22. Property tax, we're looking at 28% of the budget, or $5.18 million. And then finally, cannabis tax hasn't been around for long, but it's our third largest revenue source. So I'd like to spend a little time on the cannabis tax tonight. After going through our budget status review this week, it appears that the year-end numbers will be even higher than anticipated. So we originally had budgeted $1.5 million for fiscal year 2021, and then found that our estimate was closer to $2.3 million. Those numbers are looking to be a little bit higher, or at least $2.4 million. So we're proposing that we would like to add an additional 2% inflationary factor to the $2.4 million proposed budget for fiscal year 22, or an additional $50,000 to the cannabis tax revenue budget. For fiscal year 23, again, we're looking at $13.4 million, or 73% of the $18.28 million budget is in those top three tax revenues: sales tax, property tax, and cannabis tax. You can see they're a big piece of the pie. So where does this money go? Well, for fiscal year 21-22, 70% of the general fund budget is spent on public safety. Police is 33% of this budget. Non-departmental, which includes our Five Cities Fire Authority contract, it's a $2 million contract. Our ARPA appropriation, our unfunded pension cost, insurance, and legal services. Also in the top three, we've made quite a contribution, as we talked about, on the capital improvement program of over $2 million this year. In fiscal year 23, we're looking at a $13.1 million of the $18.28 million budget is comprised of the top three: police, non-departmental, and the capital improvement program. And finally, to summarize the general fund, if we look at the last two columns, we're starting with a $4.5 million estimate for our beginning reserves, and we're ending fiscal year 22 with the annual surplus of $137,000 and a 32% operating reserve. So our council goal is 25%. So we have a nice cushion there in fiscal year 22. Also in 23, we're looking at almost $488,000 surplus, or a 36% operating reserve. So I'd like to spend some time on the American Rescue Plan Act. You also hear the acronym ARPA. This was passed by Congress in March of 2021. The city's share, originally when we had reported this, we thought it was 2.5, but we were pleasantly surprised last week and found out that the city will be receiving over 3.2 million, and this is based on the city's population. Our first disbursement, we should expect to receive 1.6 million by July 16th of 2021. And then the second disbursement will come a year later, but we need to spend at least 80%, or 1.3 million of the initial funds, before we get that second disbursement. The funds must be obligated by December 31st of 2024, and they must be expended by December 31st of 2026. So that gives us almost 5 years to spend the funds. Although the first disbursement, we need to spend at least 80% of the initial funds. Included with the staff report was an attachment that talked about, it was a fact sheet, and included were the eligible uses. These eligible uses include supporting public health expenditures, addressing negative economic impacts caused by the public health emergency, serving the hardest hit communities and family, replacing lost public sector revenue. Now our city doesn't, fortunately, we have not really lost any revenue. We came out of the pandemic pretty well, so I don't think that applies to us. Providing premium pay for essential workers, and investing in water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. We came to you in April and talked at the budget update, giving you some examples of potential ARPA uses for the city of Grover Beach. Those include utility or rental assistance, assistance to nonprofit agencies serving Grover Beach residents, economic development support and additional business assistance, and homelessness services and facilities, including maybe a pilot shelter location. So the recommendation is to review the fiscal year 2021-23 proposed budget and fiscal year 2021-26 capital improvement program. And to provide direction, two things that I talked about was the cannabis increasing our proposed budget by $50,000 for that, and then maybe giving us some direction on the ARPA funding, maybe some broad direction on that. And to help us finalize the budget for adoption on June 28th, 2021, or provide staff with alternate direction. With that, I am open to any questions and comments.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation, Ms. Purcell, and well done. And also kudos to Mr. Bronson and his entire staff on putting together a very readable, very thought out budget that had community input as well as council input throughout the almost the entirety of the year. So, but before I turn it over to council questions, I did just want to highlight the fact that this is a new endeavor for Grover Beach, and the fact that we are using a 2-year budget cycle where previously we've done a 1-year budget cycle. So I don't know if Mr. Bronson, you wanted to kind of highlight or say anything about what's different between a 1-year budget process and a 2-year budget process.
Sure, I can take that, and Ms. Purcell can fill in the blanks that I might not include. Many cities, in fact, that's why I say most cities, use a 2-year budget process. And the idea behind it is that it helps to extend out the planning, the budgeting, and the goal setting for not just one single year, but over a 2-year period. And so I think it helps to be able to plan for that in our budget process. And then we basically are putting together 2 budget years together. By law, the council can only appropriate funds for 1 year. So year 2 is a projection that we'd bring back to you a year from now. But the idea is that we would not be reopening the budget process all over again. We have numbers that are in place. If there are any significant adjustments we have to make, we can do those. But it gives us more time to then focus on perhaps broader needs, like a long-term 10-year capital needs assessment to look at broader trends and be able to have some more time and bandwidth to be able to spend on those activities versus the operating budget that we worked on very closely this fiscal year. So a 2-year budget cycle is similar to other communities. Pismo Beach and Rio Grande are on the same cycle now as we are, which is helpful from a collaboration standpoint that we're all on the same budget cycle together. And with that, Deanne, anything else you would add to that?
Well, I think you've hit the important points, but being a small city, I think it's just much more efficient with a small staff. There's something to be said with putting together one budget document every 2 years. It's a lot of work. A lot of time goes into it. And as Mr. Bronson said, the second year is a projection. So we do go back and we keep you updated. We do a thorough review. And so we will, we put it together in the first year, but the second year we're still looking at it and we're still updating it if it needs to be. So I think it's more efficient.
Very good. Thank you for that explanation. So let's see Mayor Pro Tem Bright, let's see if you had any questions on the budget document. Let's start with the budget document and then we'll come back and do a secondary discussion on the ARPA funding. So let's start with any questions specifically on the budget.
No, I really didn't have any questions, I guess, on the document itself, other than, I guess, well, I suppose I did. I think I've just told a fib. I did. Under the unfunded CIPs, regarding the security cameras, I thought we had a discussion about that. I could be making this up, but sometimes I have these discussions with myself and I think that I've had them with other people. So, but I thought that we discussed the security cameras and I thought that had been resolved to be funded, but as I said, maybe not. I mean, it's such a, I mean, when you're talking about, you know, millions of dollars, it was a $60,000 expense, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I'm trying to find it here. I'm furiously looking, and now, of course, I can't find it. But I do believe it was about $60,000 for those cameras. Anyway, so that was my question about that. So I'm going to have to rely on somebody who actually has a memory.
And actually, let me kind of jump in there and see if I if my memory serves, or I'll turn it over to.
Here. Thank you. You're muted.
The sensitive mouse. Okay, so I apologize for that. So if memory serves, we had allocated funds for that, but it was going to be coming back at a mid-year kind of adjustment based upon what the final surplus or the final reserves were going to be from there. So I think we did provide previous direction to do that, but it was going to be allocated in a future budget update. Is that correct, Ms. Purcell?
So I might let the police chief add, but I know that we had a couple security cameras that were approved with last year's mid-year adjustment. And I think he also has a few cameras that are budgeted in his budget this year. I don't know if there's additional cameras. I would think Chief Peters, would you like to add to that?
Sure, I can add to that. Yeah, last year in the mid-year, we did approve additional funding for security cameras, and that was able to get us funding at most of the parks or cameras at most of the parks. This year, we do have some funding in the budget for security cameras for one additional park, that being the skate park. And that is actually in part of the Public Works budget as well, because we need to actually install power and power poles there before we can put cameras. So there is some funding for that last location. And I believe there's only about $10,000 additional funding for maintenance of the existing cameras throughout our whole security network.
Okay, so I guess so within, still I don't have that page, that CIP page, but it discusses the Cleaver Park. So I don't know if we would really be putting a camera in Cleaver Park. Anyway, so that was my question. So I just kind of wanted to bring that to the attention, and skate park was still included in. So that was my only question, and when we get to comments, I will just have my say then.
So, very good. You. Okay. Thank you. So next we'll go to Councilmember Roberts, see if he has any questions on the budget.
I have no questions at this time, Mayor. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Rushing.
No, I do not have any questions either. I am incredibly proud, though, that we have such an amazing budget, though. Cheers.
Very good. Yeah, and I didn't have any questions either, specifically because we've been talking about the budget for the better part of the last 6 or 8 months. And so all of our questions and community input has been very beneficial to provide to staff in crafting a budget. So let me ask the city manager if he has a preference, whether you'd prefer public comment on the budget portion and then the ARPA funding portion, or just wait until combined at the at the end of the presentation.
I would defer to the council on that, but given where we are, it might be helpful just for us to keep on going with the ARPA discussion and then have public comment from there.
Very good. I concur with that. So we'll turn it back over to Ms. Purcell for the next part of her presentation. Yes, I'm anticipating it's Ms. Purcell.
Well, actually, Ms. Purcell reviewed the ARPA material with the council, and so really, if there are any questions, the council may have before we seek any direction from the council on the allocation. And again, just to reiterate what Ms. Purcell said, the ARPA funding is budgeted. So that money is there as non-departmental, but any direction or guidance from the council from a broad category standpoint will help us in really understanding where our council wants to put these dollars to best use in the community. We've outlined the eligible uses from the U.S. Treasury. We have the information in the attachment that really goes into more detail. We've identified some potential examples that we've highlighted before, but this is really a chance for the council to weigh in on how best these one-time federal stimulus dollars can help us rebound, recover, and retool coming out of COVID-19.
Very good, and thank you for putting me back on the straight and narrow with regards to the ARPA fundings and that ARPA slide. So let's see if there's any questions with respect to that to the ARPA funding. So we'll start with Councilmember Rushing this time. See if there's any questions before we go to public comment.
No questions.
Very good, Councilmember Roberts.
No questions.
Very good, Mayor Pro Tem Bright. Very good. No questions either. So, and my questions have again have been answered throughout the course of the presentations. I did kind of bring up one item to the city manager earlier today, and I don't think we have direct concurrence from the Department of Finance yet, but it has to do with water conservation and whether that would fall into the opportunity for water infrastructure programs. My thought there would be the city has had a successful water conservation program for years, whether it be our cash for grass or our appliance replacement programs or something of that nature. So it'd be interesting to see if we could utilize that those funds to allocate towards some of our water conservation, realizing that would help our water infrastructure as well. So seeing unless I generated questions, let's go ahead and turn to public comments, where if anyone wants to speak on this item, please call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if anyone has joined us.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. So this is a good sign that our budget process has been robust along the way, as no one has any last minute comments on our public on our budget. So I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council for comment and direction. So I'll turn it over to Mayor Pro Tem Bright for her comments.
So we're talking about ARPA funding. That's where we are. Okay.
I think that would be, unless there's any specific comments you have on the budget.
Well, I do have comments on the budget, definitely. But did we?
We are taking them as kind of a joint discussion tonight. So if you want to start with comments on the budget, and then we'll get to discussion on ARPA. So we'll let you start.
Okay. I think I'll like to talk about ARPA first, I think, and then I'll just talk about the budget itself. So as far as how I would like to see ARPA funds expended is, first of all, I'd like to see them expended to serve our community and the hopefully the businesses and the families that need it the most, or how we can help in that respect. Also, if there's some way that we can assist, as staff had suggested, in helping along the lines of a homeless facility in some way. I mean, this is our one chance to have a big chunk of change that I don't know that we'll ever have that opportunity again. So I'm hopeful that we might be able to assist in that respect some way. The other item that I don't believe staff had included in their recommendation is investing in water sewer infrastructure. We've got some unfunded CIPs with some big numbers next to them that maybe we might be able to start nipping away at some of those, possibly. I know that big number's not going to go that far, but I'm hoping that maybe we could look at some of those things as well. So kind of in that order is where I'd like to maybe see those funds be expended. As far as the budget is concerned, I just think, well, first of all, I'm just so proud and excited to see how far we've come. We actually have money. It's marvelous. It's wonderful. And I just love it. But the document itself it's easy to read. I love the appendix. I mean, you can actually go there and understand what the heck you're reading. So I think that's a marvelous idea. The artwork, I think, is just such a great addition. It kind of gets people invested in the document itself. I must say, though, we did have a two-year budget one time. I can't remember when, maybe 2008, 10, 12, I can't remember. We did try it, and it was a great thing, but then it all fell apart. We didn't have any money, things just happened, but we did try it once, so we have been forward thinking before. But anyway, it's really a marvelous document, easy to read, good to look at, and so thank you very much for your hard work and your the thoughtfulness that went into it to make it something that people can actually pick up and read. So thank you for all of that. So that's it for me.
Definitely thank you for those comments. So next we'll turn to Councilmember Roberts, see if he has either concurrence or additional comments with what Mayor Pro Tem Bright mentioned about ARPA or any comments on the budget document itself.
Yes, I do concur, Mayor Pro Tem Bright, and staff has laid out an excellent plan as far as proposing what we should spend the money on, and I agree pretty much. I don't know if this is any type of order that they put it in or just suggestions, but it looks like a pretty good order. I'd move the homelessness services above our economic development because we pretty much do a lot of that without that type of funds, but they can certainly fund some of that. But the utilities and rent assistance, I think, should be a priority. I do like the idea of assisting the nonprofits. We do have quite a few nonprofits in town that were hit really, really hard, and some of them aren't even here anymore, unfortunately, because of the COVID. So to assist some of them to get back open again would be awesome. And the homeless services, definitely, and the facilities that we desperately need in our area. So that's what I would suggest on that. And that's it. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that input. Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So again, to follow up with my fellow council members, this was a fantastic budget to read. You could actually flip through it and not only get a sense of the state of the city, but actually get into the nitty-gritty of our finances, which I was thrilled to see how amazing we are doing right now. So the amount of surplus that we have and our forethought are fantastic. So thank you for that. Thank you for pulling all together. And I love the artwork, and it was all perfect. Regarding ARPA, however, I mean, this is a once in a generation or century kind of concept that we have for us right now. And, you know, these funds are designed for the recovery of our people. And at the same point, I'm looking through what it is we have. As a city, we're looking at a budget that is amazing right now. We survived very, very well as a city. So how can we help the people that were hit hardest by this past year? And how can we make everyone come through as best as possible? So I definitely want to focus on homeless services, childcare. I know that we've had projects in the past. I believe some of them may not be funded currently, I would love to see additional elements of childcare. I know personally, as the father of a 10-year-old, there have been some serious times over the last year that I literally had no idea what I was going to do. So friends and family definitely helped, but we don't always have that available to us. Rental assistance is still going to be an issue for the foreseeable future. And I think that those are my top keys at that point. Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Very good. Thank you for all of those comments. And I'll concur. First off, on the budget, I would kind of express my appreciation for that for staff. And it's always good to be in a position to where the second time around on a 2-year budget is what's going to stick. And hopefully it'll stay this time. So with regards to ARPA, I concur with my fellow colleagues with respect to kind of using our own roadmap for our highest city goals and our city goals throughout the course of this process, with homelessness and housing being high on our priority list, public safety, where that can be used for ARPA funds as well, economic development, economic assistance, as well as rental assistance, and then also the nonprofit assistance as well. I think we have a common theme with what we've been doing as a city and as a council specifically in providing the economic assistance, the rental assistance, and the social services assistance that we've been able to provide. And I think the ARPA funding does give us an opportunity to continue that and kind of strengthen the safety net that we have in our community through this funding. And then in addition to being able to utilize for infrastructure needs of water and sewer, whether it be taking some of those unfunded CIP projects and bringing them forward to a point of completion, or at least to the next step in the delivery process. So I think that's kind of concurrence again with my fellow staff members, or excuse me, fellow council members, with the remembrance that yes, I'm supportive of looking into a potential pilot program in partnership with others regarding some homeless services as well. So here I'll turn to our city manager and see if that framework is adequate for what you need with respect to the ARPA funding, or if you need some additional kind of meat on the bones, or if that gives you our top five areas of which to utilize these funds.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I appreciate the guidance and thoughts about how to best spend these dollars in a general policy manner. And what I'm hearing is a strong priority on homelessness as an overarching item that resonated with each of you. And I think there's a lot of different things we could do with this as we work with our fellow communities around us, nonprofit agencies, on looking at specific services and facilities that could be utilized with these funds. So I will definitely put that up there. I also heard the nonprofit assistance as a key area for us to use. We haven't really provided any funding nonprofits thus far in our various assistance efforts. So I think this is a new area for us and will really help us over this next year. The assistance theme in providing utility rental assistance still is key, and I heard that theme. Economic development business assistance, I think, is still on the list, and that's noteworthy because right now we have our economic development contract next year funded out of ARPA funding at the staff level. And so I think that helps to continue to recover and rebuild, because that work helps to employ individuals and add more jobs to the community as we go forward. So staff would still seek to include that as part of our overall mix. And then we can keep exploring additional opportunities for business assistance as we go forward. Our grant program under the COVID-19 response was tremendous and really has helped not just keep businesses in place, but now expanding businesses, growing businesses, attracting businesses. And that'll be a key theme throughout our budget program over this next year. And then certainly we will look at the water sewer infrastructure opportunities We do have right now $3.5 million of unfunded water projects and about $200,000 of unfunded wastewater projects. So any number of those could take the entire ARPA funds, but we'll look selectively at areas where we could apply some ARPA funds to key unfunded projects to scope those out as part of our CIP and bring those back to you later in this next fiscal year. So again, we have good direction that we heard from the council. I think ARPA funding will be with us for the next several years. We don't have to spend it all immediately, but we wanted to have general policy parameters to then craft specific items at the staff level.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. And I would, that very last comment that you said about the water and sewer infrastructure kind of triggered something, a possibility in my brain. And let's see if it's a possibility to blend water and sewer infrastructure with economic development. I mean, realizing that our water and our sewer master plans have components that are needed to be included, but perhaps there is even some of those projects that are in areas that would spur economic development, which would be assistance under the ARPA funds as well. So if we can tie more than one of these elements together, I think we should try and think outside the box in that fashion. So not sure if that has an immediate response from Mr. Bronson. From a thought process, whether that would be eligible, or we'll just talk about that in the future.
I think it would fall in the category of water sewer infrastructure, which is broadly defined as pipes in the ground, tanks in the air, specific infrastructure. And I think how we apply that could be tailored to what our needs are. And certainly we're looking at key areas of the community to help focus our infrastructure needs to help grow our economy and grow future development opportunities. So we'll look at that, have that filter in mind, so to speak, as we look at potential infrastructure opportunities in approaching this next capital needs process and using ARPA as a tool to help us do that.
Very good. Thank you for that. So this is a kind of more of a receive and file and provide final direction. So before we kind of conclude this item, let me go back through and see if there's any other questions, comments that have come up from the council members. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
No more questions, just a comment. And it is in reference to the to Mr. Bronson's, I guess it's his message or his city overview. And it's his conclusion. And what he says about our city in his conclusion, it just really touches me what when you said through these difficult times, our community has supported one another while demonstrating the can-do spirit that exemplifies this city. Grover Beach does not shy away from bold ideas and uncharted waters, but rather embraces opportunities that can lead to a better community and improved quality of life. And I just think that is just so apropos and just so Grover Beach. So I just want to thank you for that, because it is just so much the way that this town is for the most part. And anyway, I just thought it was just so us. So thank you for that. That's all.
Well said. Well said. Very, very well said, and very well written as well, Mr. Bronson. So appreciate that. So, next, I'll turn to Councilmember Roberts. See if there's any last momentary comments.
I'll concur with our Mayor Pro Tem Bright's. It's very, very good. Matt Bronson has a great attitude about the city. We're fortunate to have him, as well as all the staff, and I'm proud to be a part of a city that's making such great decisions and the finances that we have in such a great position we're in. It's very exciting times, and we're going to rebuild the community with the people that are hurting and help the unfortunate that didn't get through the COVID quite as well as some of us did. And I'm just proud and honored to be part of it. And I thank you for that. And thank you all.
Very good. Definitely appreciate those comments as well. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you. Again, it's difficult to follow Karen because she is so perfectly expressive of what I feel about Grover Beach at this point. It is an honor to be here, and it's an honor to work with all of you. Mr. Bronson, it's been an amazing honor to with you over these past few months, and I look forward to working with you more over the coming years, and your leadership for the city is truly exemplary. So thank you, sir. And the rest of city staff, you're all like absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for those comments. And I'll just concur with that as well and express, again, our appreciation for that. So we do have a quick action on this, a recommendation, which was to review the fiscal year 21-23 budget documents and the five-year 2021-26 capital improvement program and provide direction to staff. And so I just want to check one last time with staff, make sure you've got the direction that you need.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor, and on behalf of the entire staff team, thank you to the council for your comments and for your policy leadership. You set the tone, and we work really hard at following that and getting things done on behalf of the community. So thank you to the council. We will take the budget and finalize with the items that we mentioned here and bring it back to you at the June 28th meeting for formal adoption to start the July 1, 2021 fiscal year. And again, thank you to the council for your steadfast leadership in guiding our organization and community.
Very good. So we will see this back on the June 28th agenda for final adoption. Thank you very much for all everybody's work on that. And that will conclude work on that item. And that'll take us to our next item, where if anyone does want to speak on the mobile vendor policy direction coming to the council, please call in at 805-321-6639, and we'll make sure that your comments are heard after staff's presentation and questions from the council. So I will turn it over to our Community Development Director Buckingham to start off this presentation.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and council members. Next slide. So I'll just start with some background. Over the last year, the city has received quite a few inquiries from mobile food vendors regarding regulations for operating on both private property as well as within the public right-of-way. So our municipal code is outdated. We only allow ice cream vendors on public streets currently, and our development code, which addresses uses on private property, doesn't even address mobile vendors at all. So as a result, staff has kind of worked around this. We've issued some temporary use permits to allow mobile food vendors to operate at special events, grand openings, and so forth. We also issued last year a TUP to GB Eats for a full-time operation of several mobile food vendors at 675 West Grand Avenue, and that was based on the council's direction to assist local businesses and property owners during our COVID restrictions, which we think will be lifted tomorrow. And you also received correspondence in your packet because GB Eats has requested the continued use as a permanent activity, which currently our code does not allow, and hence some of our discussion tonight. So next slide. So mobile food vendors, commonly referred to as food trucks, as most people know, they use a vehicle to sell food from a parked vehicle. But although less common, mobile vendors can also sell merchandise. Food trucks have become increasingly popular, as we all know, and they do bring diverse dining options to communities. So while historically they have been seen as competing with brick and mortar restaurants, food trucks are now often viewed as complementary to restaurants, and neither the city nor the South County Chambers of Commerce have received complaints from restaurants during the time that GB Eats has been operating, which has been over a year now. So in general, staff supports increasing opportunities for mobile vendors, and hence our reason tonight having this discussion in front of you. So next slide. So based on the increased interest we've received, the outdated ordinances I mentioned, and lifting of remaining COVID restrictions, staff is requesting the council provide direction on policy and regulations for mobile vendors operating on private property for both temporary and permanent use, and within our public right-of-way or public streets, as we commonly refer to them as. So based on council direction, staff would draft an ordinance update, and we would return to the council in fall for review and consideration of adopting those ordinances. So again, tonight we're just seeking input from the council. Next slide. So starting with private property, staff has identified several topics for council consideration and providing direction about a potential ordinance. The first issue for council consideration is what types of sales to allow. And while the focus tonight is primarily on mobile food vendors, there is also this broader issue of whether other types of mobile vendors should be allowed to operate on private property. So while mobile food vendors operate from a vehicle that is self-contained and they do not need to display items, there are a variety of goods that can be displayed from a vehicle or in a parking lot. So the council could consider limiting the types of mobile vendors, again, on private property as follows. You could allow mobile food sales only. You could allow mobile food sales and merchandise within a self-contained vehicle, meaning that there would be no outdoor display of goods. Or third, you could allow mobile food sales and merchandise with no limitations that would allow outdoor displays. I will say that staff generally does have a concern about the outdoor display of merchandise by mobile vendors. It could proliferate. It has the potential from detracting from our city efforts to beautify and improve the appearance of our community. We've talked about transforming West Grand Avenue into more of a tourist destination. So all of these things need to be looked at in balance. And further, I'll touch on a little bit later, the state has now created an opportunity for merchandise sales on public sidewalks. So I'll get to that later. So next slide. So just some pictures. This would be your typical food truck that you're used to seeing. Next slide. And here's just an example of a food truck. We say they're self-contained. You can drive down the road, you can lift up these gates or roll up a door, and all of a sudden you're in operations. There's no need to put anything outside or display anything other than a menu. Next. So here's an example, albeit maybe exaggerated, about a display of items from a vehicle. So that's the primary difference between not displaying merchandise or items versus displaying merchandise. Next. So here's just another example. This is a clothing vendor. It's partly self-contained, and that there's typically you can walk inside the truck. As you can see here, there's things inside the truck, but those things can also spill out outside as well, as you can see here. So you have display merchandise. And lastly, next slide, just yet another example. You can pull into a parking lot and you can display your items for sale in a parking lot. So just different, all examples of mobile vendors that could be operating on private property. So next slide. So moving on to other issues you may want to discuss, the location to operate. The council could allow in all non-residential zones. When we say non-residential zones, we're talking about commercial, industrial, parks and rec zones. So you could allow it at a park, as well as public facilities, allowing it to operate on city-owned property. The council could also limit the use to specific areas. Rather than citywide, you could focus out on West Grand Avenue as a tool to attract people into a certain area. Duration of operations. Again, we're seeking direction on the appropriate duration. If it's the intent for them to be truly temporary, then the number of days could be limited to 2 or 3 days per week in one location. Additionally, the council could expand that and allow a few days per week at multiple locations. So you could operate 2 days from one business and move on and move down the street and be there a couple of more days. Next slide. Another possibility is multiple vendors on a property. We do see this occasionally in other communities, and we're seeing it with GB Eats on, albeit a more permanent basis, but they may want to park on the same property. Staff does support this, though it's likely to be limited to properties that are larger that can accommodate multiple food trucks. without eliminating all the on-site parking. It could also be acceptable when done in a limited duration, such as a monthly event where a business uses its entire parking lot for multiple food trucks. And that, again, could include locations such as our train station or even Ramona Park. Next, operations on vacant lots. In general, staff believes it would be best if mobile food vendors operated on developed lots that are at least paved as opposed to dirt lots that can create dust issues as well as access and other things. In addition, a mobile vendor on a developed lot with a business, in conjunction with the business, may allow customer access to restrooms and on-site trash bins. So there could be other symbiotic relationships there. Next slide. So far, the issues that I've raised are pertaining to temporary uses, but as I mentioned, the operations of GB Eats is an example of potential for a permanent operation of several food vendors on a property. So again, staff is supportive of the approach, but it would use such use would require a larger lot, vacant or underutilized, with ample parking to accommodate existing use and the permanent food trucks, which Grover Beach GB Eats is an example of a site that does have the ability to accommodate both of those. A permanent operation is a little bit different. It also affects your operating requirements, as you need to have more amenities in a permanent location. You obviously need tables, chairs, restrooms, trash cans, and so forth. So much different than the mobile vendor just pulling in and operating for a few hours. The operator, staff believes, should provide this on-site parking consistent with our minimum code requirements for restaurant parking, because it becomes the primary use when you're doing this. It is really a restaurant, even though they may be mobile, they are operating there on a permanent basis. It's not an ancillary use, as is the case of a temporary mobile vendor that's pulling into an existing business's parking lot for a few hours. Next. And as you've all seen, just a couple of slides here of GB Eats. Next. And there they are operating at night. Next. So for permit requirements, staff would recommend that a temporary use permit be used for temporary mobile vendors. Probably no surprise there. They are a temporary use. But we would also, for permanent, we would recommend an administrative development permit, more of a land use type of permit that speaks to the permanency of the operation and it not being temporary. Both of these application types, I'll just say, they're reviewed quickly and they are approved at the staff level. There's no public hearing, no planning commission review of either one of those applications. So next slide. So moving on to the public right-of-way. Operating the public right-of-way has different operating issues than operating on private property. So the council should consider whether to allow the expanding mobile vendors in the right-of-way, or if expanding the use of mobile vendors on private property itself provides adequate opportunities where maybe they don't need to be on, if they're on private property, I should say, does the council also want to allow them on public property? Are there opportunities that are ample enough on private property? So again, the council should consider providing direction if you wanted to draft an ordinance on similar types of issues that I talked about, or private property. Again, types of sales, you can have mobile food sales only, you can have food sales and merchandise. You can also have services such as mobile detailing. Occasionally you do have services that could be provided within the public right of way. I would just add, not to confuse this with mobile detailing, pet grooming, there's a whole slew of services now that comes to somebody's residence by appointment. That's not what we're talking about here. That can be allowed with a home occupation permit for a vendor, or I should say some kind of business tax certificate for them to operate in the city, but they're just going to provide a service on private property. Again, location to operate here, we could, mobile vendors can drive on city streets, but the council does have the ability to regulate where they can stop and make those transactions. So if the council wants to expand the types of mobile vendors operating on public streets, it could limit the use to, again, non-residential zones, commercial, industrial, and so forth, or it could include all zones, including residential zones. Next slide. Duration of operations. Many cities allow mobile vendors. They limit the time that they can park on a public street. So for example, if a mobile vendor is serving lunch, then only a few hours would be necessary to operate. Staff in this case would recommend that mobile vendors not be parked in the same location for more than 2 hours per day. Proximity to restaurants. There are some cities that have actually established a minimum distance from existing residents to avoid conflict of a mobile food vendor parked in front of an existing restaurant. The council could consider some kind of minimum distance to try to avoid those conflicts. And lastly, safety issues. The operation of mobile vendors on public streets does have the potential to cause safety issues depending on the specific location. And some of those things could include having proper sight distance at intersections, safe pedestrian access. If you didn't have sidewalks at that location, that could create issues, or an area is just not properly lit at night. In addition to all those, lighting used by mobile vendors for advertisements and dining areas may need to be restricted as well, as they can interfere with vehicle and pedestrian traffic. Next slide. So permits required then for potential use of the public right-of-way. Based on those safety issues I just mentioned, staff would recommend a new permit type be created specifically for street vendors that would allow staff on a case-by-case basis to evaluate these based on whether the vendor was operating from a stationary location, again, pulled over at the curb like a food truck, or if they're driving through the streets and pulling over for a sale such as an ice cream truck. So in addition, staff would be able to evaluate those potential safety issues related to stationary vendors as part of this permit application review. Again, hard to best done on a case-by-case basis because one location versus another may vary in those safety issues. So in addition to all this, the staff does recommend rescinding. We have a 1960 uniform traffic code that was adopted in 1960, and it does address uses in the public right-of-way. To say the least, it probably needs to be updated, and we would recommend rescinding that and replacing it with a newer version that's a little more appropriate. Next slide. And so lastly, sidewalk vendors I mentioned earlier. So in September of 2018, state did approve a law allowing sidewalk vendors for food and merchandise, and it does preempt local ordinances, and it limits how the city can regulate sidewalk vendors. State law gives cities the options. An option, you can either enforce the state law or you can adopt your local ordinance as long as it's consistent with state law. In this case, we took a look at it and it was provided your packet, and we think that it would be best if we adopted our own local ordinance to assure safe operations and hours of operations, and we can regulate time, place, and manner. So again, staff would recommend that we move forward with our own ordinance. So next slide. So in conclusion, tonight staff's requesting council direction on, again, mobile vendors on private property, including both the temporary and permanent operations, mobile vendors in the public right-of-way, including rescinding the uniform traffic code, and finally, as I just mentioned, preparing a local sidewalk vendor ordinance. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Buckingham. Appreciate the presentation. So let's see if who has questions of staff. Let's start with Councilmember Roberts.
Do we don't have information on or do we have information from AG and PISMO? Or they allow such things going on in their cities? Bruce.
Our look was that only the city of San Luis Obispo has adopted an actual ordinance that specifically addresses, in their case, just mobile food vendors. I think most other cities, if they've been, if this has come up, they've probably done what your current staff has done, and that's issued some kind of temporary use permit.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Again, our goal is to get more input from the council so we can tailor an ordinance that would better reflect your thoughts on how they should operate.
Okay. I have a thought. I just thought of it while you were speaking. You know, we have quite a few restaurants in Grover Beach, and we are a small area. I'm concerned about the existing businesses and the competition that would be imposed by these food vendors. It's a lot less expensive to operate a truck than it is a brick and mortar building. Is it totally, I mean, this might be off the wall, but could we require that you own a restaurant in order to have a vending truck? Is that...
The council can regulate this in any way they would choose.
Okay.
I would say that has been the common historical concern, is that would mobile food vendors compete with existing brick and mortar restaurants in your community that have made an investment? And somewhat anecdotal, but again, we haven't seen any issues or complaints received from GB Eats. And I would say in general, we're not, I think in other communities, they're not hearing that complaint for the most part.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. So next we'll go to Councilmember Rushing.
Thank you, sir. So I get back to my notes there. Personally, I love GB Eats. I think it's fantastic. I love that there is a place that our residents in the South County in general can come to and find a whole assembly of different things to eat. To Councilmember Roberts' point, I personally think that this is a classic situation of a rising tide that raises all boats. The more that we have a reason for people to come out to go and choose Grover Beach as a destination for a dinner, the better all of our restaurants can be. I think there are more than enough people in the South County and the rest of the county and northern Santa Barbara County to support what we have at this point. The more people actually realize that there's a good option for us, the better off we are. I am personally not incredibly a huge fan of mobile sales outside of food necessarily. I don't know that I necessarily want trucks going through the neighborhood selling clothes. That seems, I'm not exactly sure what that does, but that's certainly up for the council discussion. But should we choose to move forward with ordinances that would make it easier for mobile food trucks to be stationary, to have an easy access to the community, I would be definitely in favor of that. On top of that, in terms of locations within the community that would be appropriate.
And actually, Councilmember Rushing, I'm going to go ahead and kind of hop in here. So we're veering away from questions. So if we can...
My apologies.
No worries. So I was kind of giving both you and Councilmember Robert a little bit of leeway, but we kind of... We're going down a path that...
No worries.
Any specific questions?
No, thank you.
Okay, no worries. Okay, great. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. So when we talk about specific areas, so if at first I was thinking about non-residential, but then is there a way that you can have a permit where you can choose non-residential or residential? Because I'm thinking about, if someone did want to have an ice cream truck, then they would certainly want to do residential. But I just don't understand. If someone has, say, a taco truck, I just can't see them, going through a residential neighborhood with the taco truck. But I can see someone doing, of course, an ice cream truck through. Am I making any sense here?
Yes. I would say you're correct that in some ways this is probably self-regulating. I mean, a mobile food truck needs lots of customers. To pull into an R1 neighborhood, they're not going to attract many customers, whereas the ice cream truck may still operate on that model of driving down residential streets. So I think if the, you know, provided the council gives us some direction, we can craft an ordinance for, again, this, we're talking specifically here about use within the public right of way. And there may be, and the police chief may want to weigh in too, as far as operating in a residential neighborhood and pulling over and so forth, and other safety issues that may arise out of that as well. And I don't know if we've had an ice cream vendor, certainly not in the last decade that I've been here, if we have that. So, Chief, anything to add?
Yes, you are correct. It's been at least 10 years since we've had an ice cream vendor, and ice cream vendors are required to go through a permitting process on their own, and then it also includes a background investigation. But the ice cream vendors, generally some of the safety concerns that we have with those are the children that run out into the roadway either trying to catch the ice cream truck or stop it, and that does create a danger for the community in that respect. But the scarcity of ice cream vendors, like I said, at least 10 years since we've had one.
Okay. So I'm not going to worry about the ice cream vendors then. All right. Thank you. That was really my thing. I did have one other question then. When Councilmember Robert, I believe, was talking about, competition from the food trucks and the brick and mortar restaurants, because I have heard from other folks that that is a concern, but you say that really hasn't been a concern that has been voiced by the chamber or other restaurants in our town. Is that true?
We have not heard that. And I think San Luis Obispo is an example of, they came to a point where they felt that the benefits outweighed any detriments in allowing mobile food vendors.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions. Thank you, Mayor.
Very good. Thank you. And I do understand we do have Jocelyn on the line tonight from the Chamber of Commerce. So perhaps we can ask her that question when she gets here. But I did have one question first. Perfect. I did have one question before we get there. Is how do we differentiate mobile vendors, either on private or public property, from a farmer's market? And do we have, I don't recall if we've got a specific farmer's market ordinance, or would that be something we include in this document?
I'm not familiar historically with how that farmer's market is operated. It's been on city property, and it may have been done through a special events permit or a temporary use permit. So I don't know if it's really part of a mobile vendor ordinance or whether there's something, a better way that we would craft that. Again, on public property, the council has a say in that. On private property, I'm not so sure I'm not so sure it would be temporary in nature unless it was just a seasonal thing that was operational. And I'll give you an example of that. Okui's operate on a seasonal basis. So there's a temporary use, if you will.
Okay. Very good. Okay. That was the only question I had specifically. I'm sure that we'll have lots of discussion. So at this point, I will go ahead and open it to the public comment. For anyone who wants to call in, please do so at 805-321-6639, and I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if we have any members of the public on the line to speak on this item.
We only have Jocelyn.
Good evening, Ms. Brennan.
This discussion, Mayor and Council, thanks for considering this and updating the food truck ordinance. I was listening to your discussion, and I will agree that It's often perceived that the food trucks would be a competition to the restaurants, but the food trucks all have really big social media followings, and so they say, hey, we're going to be at GB Eats, you know, today, and then it draws people to Grover Beach. It draws diners to Grover Beach that maybe otherwise wouldn't come, so it can be a really good thing, and we have not heard of any complaints from any neighboring restaurants. We are in support of the GB Eats becoming a permanent spot. It's done really well and it's really popular. And I think if they improve the site, it will become even more so. And it is in line with our tourism goals. Also, the outdoor dining survey that we put out showed that 31% of people, even after the restrictions are lifted, are still not comfortable eating indoors. So it does provide more options for eating in Grover Beach. But those are my comments, and I'm available if there's any other questions. I know that one of the things in the staff report is the distance from other restaurants, and I think that is something to be considered. But there are times when restaurants, you know, want to have maybe a dessert food truck near their location, so it would be something that maybe could be worked out with exceptions if the nearby restaurants were working with the food truck vendors. So that's it for me.
Very good. Thank you for those comments, Ms. Brennan. Let's see if there's any members of the council that have questions for you. Go ahead and unmute yourself if you do. I'm thinking Mayor Pro Tem Bright might have, but you may, Jocelyn may have responded to her question during the course of her comments.
Thank you. She did. However, then she brought up the idea of proximity to other restaurants, which I just don't know how that would, I don't know how that would really work. So I guess my question would be, I suppose I was thinking like possibly in the industrial area. So Jocelyn, were you kind of alluding to if, like a manufacturing shop were to say, or no, you were talking about a dessert. That's right, a dessert truck. But I was thinking like a manufacturing place asked a food truck to maybe come and visit during lunchtime or something like that, so their employees didn't get in their car and leave or whatever, that sort of thing. Have you heard anything like that might be desirous of some of our businesses or anything?
Yes, that is really popular. And I think a lot of the food trucks are doing that, you know, already throughout South County. For example, medical offices and things like that are a popular spot for food trucks tends to be on private property. It's not in the public right of way, but I do think that that's a benefit to employers and employees. Yes. And I was okay. Going in and out of the queue, so I you cut out a little bit, so I hope I answered your question correctly.
You did. Thank you. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Very good, certainly. So, Councilmember Rushing, any questions for Ms. Brennan?
No, thank you so much.
Very good. Mr. Councilmember Robert, any questions?
Hi, Jocelyn. How are you tonight?
Great.
Good. Have you spoken to any restaurants directly, Jocelyn, as far as how they feel about this?
I have spoken to a couple of them. I spoke to Darwish just because they were, you know, nearby there, and that we were working with them on their outdoor dining. And I've spoken with Let's Wing It. And then the only other person that I think I've spoken to is Spoon Trade about this, but they were all aware of it because I did, when GB Eats first applied for the permit and was planning to open, I did send it to all the Grover Beach businesses as an email.
Thank you.
Very good. And I didn't have any specific questions for you tonight, Ms. Brennan, so thank you for your comments. And we'll check in with our city clerk and see if there's anyone else on the line for public comment on this item.
No, there is not.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment, and I'm hoping that Ms. Brennan sticks around just in case as we go through our comments and so forth, that if we need to bring her back in, we can call on her assistance and expertise. So with that, so I will, from a ground rules kind of standpoint, probably the wrong terminology, but I think we have got two potential discussion paths, obviously private property, public property. But I think the easiest one to do now is to see if there's anybody who really wants to keep around a 1960s era traffic code. So unless there's some overriding need, I would say we've got consensus to rescind and replace that that ordinance or that that document and replace it with an appropriate one. Everybody okay with that?
I'd say it's about time.
Okay. Very good. So we'll consider that consensus on that. And I think we're done with that item. Thank you very much. Just kidding. So that does take us back into our private public discussion. So let's have the private discussion first, with regards to the types of uses, the locations, the duration, and then any other information that folks might want to share. So let me start with Councilmember Rushing, because I know I kind of interrupted his thought process, and I'm hoping I didn't derail him.
No, you are very good, sir. No worries there. And my apologies. I'm still figuring out the way these things work here. So for private locations, I love what GB Eats is doing, and I would love to see that that built out and expanded. I think the temporary use permit needs to be made more permanent for them so that they can continue moving forward and building it out. I'm a fan in general of the use of private property for things like this. I think that it is a draw for our community. There's not a lot like that in the South County in general, and anything that can bring people to Grover Beach as a destination for a fantastic meal, I think is a boon for our entire community. So that's pretty much my shtick on private. I've got some public comments for later, but I'll get there when the time comes.
Very good. And before I leave you, Mr. Rushing, any discussion on perhaps areas of the city for locations? Just commercial, industrial, every place but residential?
I would say non-residential. I'm a big fan of, there was discussion of lots that were paved, I believe, at one point to prevent additional dust and kick up. At the same point, too, I think that pulling together trucks in a space that actually feels like a place that you would want to park and be able to sit down under a tent and have a meal at the same time is fantastic. I'm not really necessarily looking for a bunch of trucks out in a field kind of a scenario. And honestly, the closer to our central core, better bring people into our city to enjoy a meal, I think. Across the board is a good thing.
Council, I need to interject one thing to sort of give you a little clarity on this specific issue. There is a state statute that bans local agencies from banning food vendors or mobile vendors in residential districts. It gives you broad latitude in terms of creating regulations in time, place, and manner. It gives you broad latitude in terms of the type of mobile vendors that you will allow in a given residential area, but you cannot outright ban mobile vendors in residential districts. So the go-forward direction of the council has to be really more of a focus on the types of mobile vendors, the time, place, and manner of regulating those mobile vendors, but you can't specifically regulate them into a given industrial district and say that's the only place that you can operate. Is that give you a little clarity?
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So, and before I leave, Councilmember Rushing, any limitation or discussion on types of vendors or duration? So I know types, I know you've expressed a fondness, for lack of a better term, for food, but anything beyond food?
Well, what I'll say is that I believe there were three options throughout. One was food with non-food but not displayed, and then non-food that was displayed. I would prefer that it would be no more than the second of those. So open to sales of non-food items, but not for full display.
Okay, very good. So next we'll turn to Councilmember Roberts. So let's see what kind of feedback you want to provide on the private sector usage, private property usage.
Private property. Yeah, it sounds like Councilor Hales says that we can't ban that. We have some latitude on time and play or time and. I'm sorry, I forgot what he said. Time and
time, place, and manner regulations, including the type. As an example, can you ban them from so many feet from a restaurant? Sure. Can you ban them so many feet from the end of a intersection so that they don't block the view of traffic? Sure. There are regulations already in place in terms of a mobile vendor, in terms of how they have to stop, where they have to locate the vehicle in the public street, and how they interact with the public. So those regulations are already in state regulations. So you can do, and you have very broad latitude to make regulations. What the courts have basically said, based on a state statute, and I believe it's the vehicle code, you just can't outright ban it.
I see.
Other than that, you have a lot of latitude in terms of how you want to regulate it and the direction that you give staff.
Okay. So we'll just be adopting those into the ordinance that we create. And I agree with Councilman Rushing that on the types of vendors, I don't want to see vendors out on the streets with all the displays all over the place. Maybe a tent with a few chairs and a table for dining would be nice. I do like the idea that mobile food vendors would come into a construction area, maybe in a residential area, just during lunchtime, so the workers can have a place that they can eat. They can't run off to restaurants and sit down, but in most cities, the construction areas, the vendors know where they are, and they just go in, bang, feed the people, and they're out. So I do like that. I like the idea of keeping them away from the restaurants so that they don't stop there first because there's a little crowd at the restaurant. So I'm open to all that, but I'm not open to setting up stores on sidewalks at all. I don't think that'd be a good idea.
Okay. Very good. So next I'll take us to Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Well, I pretty much agree with both my colleagues as far as I don't know that I have anything to add. I think I prefer food sales only, that I prefer that they be contained, they be on developed lots. One thing, I guess, I don't know, that there be trash bins or some kind of, I imagine that would be, that just goes with along with everything else. So I don't think I really have anything to add. Have we talked about limiting the duration?
There hasn't been any specific conversation about it. Councilmember Robert did say kind of the dine and dash is a bad term, but kind of going into the lunchtime on construction sites. So I think that was the only discussion we've had so far on duration.
So I think, we're talking residential, so I think that
Actually, this is just private property we're talking about.
Private.
So, all right, yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Private property. So I don't know if we need to talk about the limiting the duration or not. But so I think that's the only thing that we haven't, that hasn't been discussed that I can think of that is on my list.
Okay, very good. So then certainly, and I'll kind of fall in line with everyone's comments so far. I am supportive of some food and some non-food as long as it's kind of contained and not outside for display. I think that's something that Councilmember Rushing and Robert had mentioned. So, but Mayor Pro Tem Bright, you had said food only. So I just want to make sure that you're okay with non-food items.
It is contained.
Contained.
It is
okay.
Contained. Yes.
Very good. Okay. And then this actually a side question for Mr. Buckingham. We had mentioned, it'll be on the public discussion. I apologize. So one thing that we haven't brought up is one of the reasons that this came forward is the city, to my understanding, had a flower vendor that wanted to try and do sales on private, effectively on private property. So we haven't really mentioned the non, she's not really a vendor in a food truck type of situation. She's got a standalone tables. So Mr. Buckingham, would this impact her, or have we found a solution in our current ordinance for that request?
I think it would be covered ultimately if a flower vendor is, again, self-contained, all of her merchandise is in a vehicle. There would be a private property route. If a business owner, again, it goes without saying that if you're going to operate on private property, that property owner is going to have to give you permission to operate. And then if they wanted to do it in the right of way, like an ice cream vendor, if you will, being pulled over at certain locations, that would ultimately be covered within our public right of way usage ordinance.
Okay. Very good. So, okay. So I think that answers my question there. Appreciate that. So it sounds like we have a predominant consensus on type locations, notwithstanding what Mr. Hale has mentioned that we can't limit private property use, but I think we do have kind of consensus on a developed lot. So with in accordance with all applicable safety standards for view, kind of corner visuals and parking on lots and so forth, and obviously private property owners have to provide their permission. So was there anything that staff heard that I haven't captured from a consensus standpoint that we need to clarify for you?
I think we're good on private property.
Okay.
Can I make one point of clarification to what I was attempting to try to say, and maybe not as artfully as I should have? I was speaking specifically to mobile vendors on public right-of-ways in residential districts, not reference to private property.
Okay, so we could potentially limit a mobile food vendor from parking on private property in a residential area.
Yes. The issue that I'm talking about is the state's preemption of your ability to regulate what goes on public streets.
Okay,
that's
so
the
we
only
can't
thing that I was referring to. Mr. Okay. Buckingham has a great handle on what you can and can't do on private property, and you have very, very broad powers there.
Okay, very good. So we can't limit who drives down our public streets is what you're saying.
I'm. Let me go back and qualify what I said. Okay, you can't outright ban it in residential districts on public streets. So we currently have a regulation that allows ice cream vendors. So functionally, you now have an ordinance in place that has not banned mobile vendors, but you've regulated very extensively to one given type of mobile vendors. Okay. I would hazard a guess that that's probably very defensible even under the state law currently. But if you were to outright ban, such as the discussion was going here, well, we'll move all mobile vendors to industrial or all mobile vendors to, and not allow them anywhere else in the city, we might have an issue.
Okay.
So that's the only point I'm making. Broad powers in terms of time, place, and manner on public streets and residential and types of vendors, you just can't outright ban them.
Okay. Definitely appreciate that. So going back to kind of the private property, so I think we're staff is clear on that. So we will move to our public discussion. So let's talk first about sidewalks, and then we'll move into streets. So I know Mr. Buckingham had mentioned, if I understand correctly, there is some state allowance for use of sidewalks for vendor activity.
Correct. The state law right now says that they can operate on our public sidewalks. Our recommendation is that we adopt our own local ordinance because we can control time, place, and manner, and we probably would be reasonable to put hours of operations and so forth on that. So that's what a local ordinance is going to get the council, is a little bit more uniform regulation of how we use our sidewalks.
Okay. And would that also be in conformance with some of the sidewalk usage that we discussed at last meeting for restaurant usage? Effectively, it's a different use. Like a thrift store can now, which they a number of them do currently, bring sales racks out onto the sidewalk for people to browse through.
Well, there are several different topics there. The state ordinance, state law just addresses food and merchandise sale on public sidewalks. Then we also already have an ordinance that regulates restaurant seating in the public sidewalk. And currently, we really don't have anything that addresses display of merchandise. Most of the display of merchandise you see on West Grand Avenue is not in the public right-of-way. It's actually sitting on private property behind the sidewalk. So we don't have anything that regulates that, and it really wasn't designed to be part of tonight's conversation.
Okay, very good. So sorry to bring that into the conversation inadvertently. But from a council standpoint, is there any concern over what Mr. Buckingham has mentioned, which is crafting an ordinance for our review that does establish the time, place, and manner for sidewalk use? Along with appropriate safety requirements. So I don't see any microphones going off. So does that provide enough direction for you, Mr. Buckingham, on sidewalks?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Thank you. That takes us to our public discussion. And so let's start. I'll go back and start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright on this one, and getting to the public discussion on the same things we were just talking about on private, which is the locations, the duration, the type of vendor. So where would you like to start?
Well, I kind of feel the same way as I do about the private property, pretty much. I'm not really excited about having every type of commodity you can think of for sale along Grand Avenue. And it certainly, that just doesn't really excite me. So I don't really know where to go with that. I like the idea of food trucks. I'm not really excited about having like clothing and flowers and whatever else that people can put in a truck and park on the side of the road and try to sell. So that I am just not a fan of that idea at all. So that would not be something that I would be in favor of. But along with everything else, I'd want them to be contained. I would not want them to be out on the sidewalk or outside of the vehicle, you know, hanging all over the place. I would want to limit the duration and all of those other things that we discussed. And that's just my first pass at this, but that's just my initial thought at this point.
Let me ask a quick question of Mr. Buckingham. So with respect to duration, and perhaps we will need to kind of talk amongst ourselves and figure out how we're interpreting this, but from a duration standpoint, realizing lunch 11 to 2 a 10 to 2 type of thing. But on private property, could a food vendor park overnight in either on private property or on public property and say, I will be open from 10 until 2, but I'm going to leave my vehicle here in a closed situation? Is that something we should or could define?
From a staff perspective, it's not our intention that a vehicle could be parked overnight, be stored, if you will, on a site. These are, again, temporary uses. And even I think for GB Eats is a good example of, they're not going to leave their mobile food truck there overnight. So while I don't think that would be an issue, that's certainly not our intent to want to encourage vehicles to just be parked and closed. We want them, when they're parked, to be operational and generating traffic, if you will.
Very good. So, so I just wanted to, that came into my head. So unless people have concerns over that, I think that is our intent as well. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright, anything else you wanted to add on the public side?
I don't think so at this point. No, okay. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Rushing, what would you like to add to the conversation?
Thank you very much. Regarding the food trucks that are servicing industrial areas for lunch, I think supply and demand is going to take care of that fairly well. I mean, they're going to fish where the fish are for the most part. So, you know, when lunch is over, they're not going to be there anymore. So I don't know that a timing is necessarily an issue for that. But in terms of location and duration and type, you know, for our public spaces, for especially food trucks, I think we can certainly have a conversation about other kinds of trucks and sale on top of this. But, you know, the use of our public right-of-way should be for our community. So how we are able to leverage and use these food trucks to make our events and to make our community better and more whole and happier is fantastic. So I would be definitely in support of use of public spaces in support of, say, sizzling summer concert series or during a sports season at some of the other parks, things that were tied into the community events that we already have that could make our community events better and a little bit more interesting. And I think that's what the right of way is for. It is for our community. So I think everything that we do with these food trucks should be in support of that.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
I agree with Councilman Rushing. I think we already have ordinances in place for the summer sizzle and stone soup and situations where they're already, where they're coming in, they're staying there during the event, and then they're leaving. This is more for the mobile people driving up and down the streets. I don't see them driving up and down the lower part of Grand Avenue, mainly because there's so many restaurants and there's very little places to stop. But the industrial areas, for sure, and the upper parts of Grand Avenue where there's not so many restaurants would be, and a lot more parking areas. And getting permission, I guess, like at Bonds, if they were to go into there, they would need permission from the manager or whoever that's to control those private parking lots. But as Councilman Rushing said, they're going to fish where the fish are, and when it's over, it's over. But I still think we should limit the times just in case they just want to park there for hours on end and wait till the next fish comes, dinner time or what have you. We don't want to have these be permanent type structures, even though they're mobile. So I like to concentrate on the mobile. And I agree with Mayor Pro Tem Bright that I don't want to see a bunch of merchandise like on that vehicle driving up and down the street. It looks like a carnival going on. I don't think anyone would appreciate that. So they should be limited to their product. Keep them inside their vehicle for the most part. A little advertising doesn't hurt, and a table with an umbrella outside temporarily I don't think would be bad. either. But most of those mobile trucks, they don't do that. They just stop, open their thing, feed the people, and the people don't hang out there. They take the food away most of the time. So just don't want a bunch of eyesores up and down Grand Avenue. That's all. Thank you.
Very good. Definitely good feedback there as well. So, and I'm in concurrence with my colleagues with regards to the self-regulating and fishing where the fish are and kind of food trucks when it comes to use of the public right-of-way. So two items perhaps to ask when it comes to that. So perhaps just one. But the mobile detailers. So we didn't really talk about those. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright kind of mentioned clothing and flowers, but so we haven't got to that. And I know they're allowed on private property. I have seen one or two kind of in a residential area adjacent to a residence doing mobile detailing in the street. Do we want to regulate that, or do we want to provide direction to prohibit that?
Well, I've had a mobile detailer come to my house, but they were in my driveway using my water. I don't know how they would do that in a public thoroughfare. So I've never seen that done. So I don't even really know what that would actually look like, tell you the truth.
I think the one that I saw, they brought their own water with them inside a tank in the truck. And so there's obviously minimal water usage, but they were in a parking area within on a residential street. So, I mean, I think my inclination would be to force those vendors to go onto private property.
I would think that really that would be the appropriate place for that type of service, I would think.
Okay.
I've actually seen quite a few, especially around Ramona Avenue. They park on the public street. They do have their own water, but they're on the public street doing the service. And I was wondering about that myself. I think they should, as Mayor Pro Tem Bright says, it should go in a private driveway instead of to use the public street. I think we might even have regulations to get that against that already, like changing your tire or oil in the street in the parking space from that for public. So I don't think they're allowed to do that now. Anyway, they just do it and they get away with it. So just not enforcing it. I agree.
Okay. Sounds like we've got consensus there. Councilmember Rushing, without a microphone turned on, I'm anticipating you have agreement.
I have nothing else to say on that. Thank you, sir.
Very good. So then actually the one other item of my two was proximity to restaurants for mobile food trucks. Do we want to have staff come back with some suggested recommendations there, or do we have a direction we want to provide to them?
The issue, as I said earlier, that I feel with the mobile food trucks down by Grand Avenue where a lot of the restaurants are, is where would they go? I guess off to a side street. But Councilmember Rushing stated earlier, I remember reading a report, the more restaurants you have in an area, the more people come out and eat. So I'd be interested in what the restaurant owners would think about it, and hopefully someone would call in and give us their opinion. But it does increase business. You have more opportunities for different types of food, and people go, oh, they got food trucks down there, let's go check it out. Oh no, I want to go in and sit down. So it is something I think that might increase business, but the concern would be where would they park, and I guess we'd regulate that. So that's my two cents there. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I agree. Thank you. I agree, and that is what I have read, and that is what I've heard. However, there have been some dissenting voices on that have talked to me, but they have not been restaurant owners. They have been people who just don't think that's true. However, if I understood Jocelyn correctly, I believe she said that she sent an email to all the restaurants and she did not get, she didn't get any concerns from any, no concern replies from any of the restaurants, any of the restaurant owners. So, but I know
that's
that
something. Sorry, I was going to say, perhaps that's something that we continue, is a notification process as part of the ordinance update, is that if you are within a specific distance, 100 feet, 200 feet of the front door, then there is a notification of the surrounding restaurants. Perhaps that's a compromise that, that we can do for our brick and mortar restaurants as well as our mobile food vendors.
I think that's an excellent idea. But I know that... when someone is looking to locate a restaurant, they sure as heck don't want to be next to a bunch of shoe stores. They, you know, they're looking to be in a, where there are other restaurants. So, but anyway, so I could go either way. I don't own a restaurant and I never have. So I sure would like to hear from other restaurant owners, though. That would be nice.
And perhaps the kind of the solution there is we allow staff to work with the chamber and see what the industry is kind of leaning towards. And that can be one of our discussion items as it comes back to us in an ordinance format. Everybody?
Excellent idea.
Everybody okay with that or have any other suggestions?
I'm good with it. There we go.
Very good. Then
Thank you.
I think certainly. So I think we've had the discussion topics that I've kind of captured with regards to direction on this item. Anything further from staff that's needed?
We've got the direction we need.
Very good. So then we will close discussion on this item and look forward to it coming back. And maybe that's one last question I can ask is when does staff anticipate this coming back to us?
Likely this fall. I think the private property is a little bit easier, and then we may come back separately with the public right-of-way stuff.
Okay, that makes sense. Very good. So that concludes work on item number 8. Takes us to back to public communications, where if there's anyone, any member of the public that wishes to address the council, please call in at 805-321-6639, and I'll check in with our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for public comment.
No, we have no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council for, looks like council committee reports. Let's go and start with Council Member Rushing.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I was involved in three different organizations since our last meeting. I'll start off with SLO Chamber of Commerce. At our SLO Governmental Affairs Committee, we had the opportunity to receive some really, really interesting discussions regarding AB 5, which discusses exemptions for contract and gig workers, specifically as related to the local newspaper delivery people. The chamber at that point decided not to take a position on that. And then we also discussed SB 314, which has a lot to do with us, has specifically in regards to extending outdoor dining and alcohol services for our local restaurants. So our parklets are dependent upon this at this point, I believe. The chamber is incredibly proud about the buy local program that we have at this point. And to Mr. Bronson's point earlier in the day, we are amazingly thrilled that we're up to $180,000 in revenue for this program. And I know that we can make it to 200 by the end of July. So thank you very much to everybody that's involved in that. Second, visit SLOCAL. I'm a part of their advisory committee. We had a really interesting conversation. Obviously, Visit SLOCAL's basic model has a lot to do with transient taxes. And so they are very, very interested on a day in, day out basis about what our local tourism industry looks like. the good news is that we seem to have come through the worst of it at this point, and we find ourselves at a fantastic, what's the phrase I put here? We are uniquely positioned as a driving destination. So as everyone comes through this period of time, we're finding that more often than not, people are choosing to take trips that are based on a single day's drive, as opposed to going onto a plane. So being that the Central Coast is perfectly positioned halfway between San Francisco and Los Angeles, we are seeing a huge bump in tourism throughout the entire county. And there seems to be no end in sight for that, which is fantastic at this point. So fingers crossed. Then finally, I'm also part of the REACH Council, Slow Advisory Committee. We had an amazing meeting. We covered a bunch of different things. It's a quarterly meeting, and this past one was specifically focused on the North Coast. So Morro Bay was heavily involved here, but we had the opportunity to learn a great deal about what Vista Industries is putting together for this giant battery plant in the shadow of the Morro Bay power plant. So this is going to be a 600 megawatt facility. It's going to be the largest battery facility in the world, which I think is fantastic that the Central Coast is going to be able to pull that together. Three separate buildings that are going to be able to pull energy from peak production times from renewable sources, you know, in the early afternoon when solar and wind are at their best, but not necessarily we're all using all of the energy that we need. It goes into the batteries. And then when we all come home from work, we'll have amazing clean energy to use as well. So those are my three committee reports. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Councilmember Rushing, for that. Let's go to Councilmember Roberts.
Good evening. Sorry, my computer is a little slow there. I have one report in regards to the RAC. Had some interesting meeting. We had received presentations from staff regarding stormwater capture in the SLO County. Also, we had presentations in the San Juan Water District regarding applications to State Water Resource Control Board. And we have ongoing situations with the rain reservoir. They gave a report on that. California drought monitoring summaries, and the groundwater basin management efforts, which are in full force, integrated regional water management, the IRWM, a lot of acronyms, and the stormwater resource plan, working on that, and various county water programs, policies, and ordinances, went over some of those, and the open reporting on the water conservation opportunities, and a lot of information on the reports for that. For those that don't know what RAC is, it's the Water Resources Advisory Committee, and they quite a few people meet to talk about our water and what they do with it, how they dispense it, how they reserve it, and there's just a lot of information. You can go to www.slocounty.ca.gov. And go into details in some of these things that you'll find quite interesting if you're interested in water. So that concludes my report. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that feedback. So Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
There we go. Well, I had a number of meetings. I'll try to be as brief as I can. Unfortunately, I don't have really wonderful news like my colleagues did. So Air Pollution Control District, most of my meetings, these committees, they had their audit. So APCD, there were no findings in their audit, which is good news.
The Napomo Mesa, they had the worst air quality in the United States on May 25th, 2021. So we'll just, I think we'll
90% of their staff has been vaccinated. That is good news. I think we'll just leave that at that. And then I had a LOCOG meeting, San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, talking about acronyms. They too had an audit. There were some recommendations, but there were no findings. One of the recommendations was that they revisit Slo County becoming a self-help county, which means revisit a sales tax in order to help with our infrastructure and roads and so on. 90% of the population in California lives in a self-help county, which means that 90% of the counties in this state has a sales tax, which those funds go towards their roads and bridges and so on. There's so much more, but I know in the interest of our time, I will leave it at that. I had a Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting whereby we had changed our mission agreement. We redid our whole mission in order to hope to appease a county supervisor so that they would not try to or would not pull out of the Integrated Waste Management Authority. So we had rewritten the JPA and the MOA agreements so that it was very clear that there would be nothing more than state mandates that the Integrated Waste Management Authority would put forth. However, unfortunately, she was not at all happy with the way that the JPAs and the MOA was written. And so we, although the cities and the special districts approved them, three of the supervisors did not, and one city did not. So if we can't get approval by the majority of the Board of Supervisors, we cannot go forward. So it ended up that a special group was put together that is going to go, they're going to get together and see if we can't put together these two agreements so that it will be agreeable to Debbie Arnold and Lynn Compton and John Pichon, so that they will eventually approve of the JPA and the MOA agreement so that we can go forward with the Integrated Waste Management Authority, so that all of our cities do not have to go about this separately. And it's SB 1383, which is the food waste ordinance that has come down from the state. For us, any city, to have to do that individually, the estimate to do that is over $2 million a year per city. So if we can't get this figured out to the satisfaction of the majority of our Board of Supervisors, it's just going to be a financial nightmare. And I can tell you that's not in our budget right now. And I'm sure it's not in any of the other cities' budgets. So that was very, very disappointing and very frustrating for nine of us on that board, the nine that voted for it. And anyway, so that was some very disappointing notes. So hopefully I'll have better news the next time I report out from our next meeting. Okay. I think that was the last of my meeting. So thank you.
Thank you for those updates. So my two committee meetings this time, one was the Five Cities Fire Authority, where we had our weed abatement hearing associated with each individual community having a smaller number of locations that need are being required to abate their property. So if they don't do it by a certain date, fire authority staff will go in and do the abatement and then charge them, the property owners, for that. And then there was also, a closed session on labor negotiations, and that concluded the Five Cities Fire Authority. And then on the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, we did have the budget introduction, which we will have a second reading of that budget at this Wednesday, the 16th, for consideration and approval. Nothing out of the ordinary there. It is a well-run district. It is a little confusing at the moment how the budget is set up, because there is the operating budget, and then there's this $20 million redundancy project that is kind of clouding how the visual looks for the budget. But overall, the district is in good shape from a rates standpoint, as well as an operational characteristic standpoint of its effluent. So, and then I have a Central Coast Community Energy meeting this coming Wednesday. So more to follow on that one. So that concludes our council committee reports. So next up is our League of California Cities Policy Committees. And I do have an update on the Transportation, Communications, and Public Works Policy Committee that did occur on June 4th. There were some legislative updates with regards to two bills. I can provide input that on those that potentially could have some direct impact on Grover Beach, one of which is AB 43, which is a bill that provides for a different interpretation of how to establish speed limits in residential and in commercial corridors. And so realizing that we've just gone through that in our community, this would provide for a different methodology, which if approved, we'll have to kind of figure out how that impacts our abilities to provide speed, setting of speed limits. It does provide a little bit more flexibility for us with respect to that. And then another piece of legislation is AB 122. Not sure the official name, but it goes kind of by the Idaho stop for bicyclists, whereby it allows, and this might be an interesting conversation for our chief of police, with regards to how bicyclists can interact with a controlled intersection, where they are allowed, if there's no conflicts, to be able to do a rolling stop through an intersection. And apparently it's been successful started in Idaho and has progressed into four other states. So the traffic study bill, AB 43, was widely supported by the policy committee. The AB 122 Idaho stop legislation was about 60-40 supported by the policy committee. So we'll see what level of survival they take out of the process through both houses of the legislature, and I'll keep you updated on those. So that takes us to our council communications, and I'll see if anyone has anything they would like to share. We'll start with Mayor Pro Tem Bright.
Thank you. Well, I really just have one, and that was I spoke with a gentleman who had, I believe, spoke with Wendy and asked that we call him. That was Mr. Charles Reed, and it was in reference to the Pride flag. So I don't know if any of you other colleagues had spoken with him. So then you all know. His concern was that he felt that the Pride organization is a political organization, and that so we were flying a political flag on government property, and that we may have set a precedent for other political groups, and therefore maybe we would need to do that for other political organizations. So I
thanked him and for, you know, his, for him taking the time to let us know. And so I don't know if maybe we might want to discuss our decision-making on flying flags. I researched it. I don't know that Pride is a political organization. I can't quite, I don't know if it is or not. So I'm putting it out to my colleagues. Maybe we could get input from our city manager, our attorney. I don't know what you folks want to do about that. If it's something that maybe we should have a policy on that or not or what, but I told him that I would discuss it at this meeting. And so here I am.
Okay. Well, definitely appreciate that. And I'll kind of reiterate my, I have not had a chance to talk with Mr. Reed, but I think from a city perspective, at least from my perspective, we bring forward requests that come to us. I'll turn to Mr. Bronson and see how many requests of these we get per year. I think it's a very small number. And as I iterated at the top after public communication, I can specifically say now that I don't think the Pride flag is a political flag, but I can see where folks would attempt to interpret anything these days as political. And I think it's more of an inclusivity issue for myself, but I'll kind of turn to my colleagues and see if there's consensus one way or the other to have further discussion. But I'll turn to Mr. Bronson first, as I see his microphone is live.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to weigh in, whether the council wishes to set up draft a policy on flying Confederate flags is really a council policy decision, and the city attorney and I will follow that direction and bring something back to you for discussion if that's the council's direction. I'll just add that the council did provide authorization in a public forum on May 10th to authorize flying the Pride flag to demonstrate inclusion and diversity and support for the LGBTQ community in Grover Beach. That was also referenced in the proclamation the council issued on May 24th. So there are two opportunities during council meetings where this did arise. And ultimately, again, staff would defer to the council if you wish to draft a formal policy around flying commemorative flags in the future. And lastly, I'll say that we have not received any other requests to date for flying such flags. Thank you.
Very good. Let me turn to Councilmember Robert and see what comments or feedback you want to provide.
Yes, I two people have contacted me in regards to the flag, and I think we should. I don't know if we need to put it on the agenda for the future to talk about it, but I'm kind of in the camp where, you know, we're in America and we're the land of the free, but we represent the community as a whole, and I don't think, as one person said, that we're showing special treatment to one organization. So I think, in my opinion, we should limit the flags that we fly to government official flags. And anyone that is in the community can certainly fly any flag they want. I have no qualms with any of that. You know, whether or not I support or not support is not even the question. Or any of us support it or not support it. It's a question of the overall community and what they would like to see. And two people have contacted me, and that's not a lot, but you know, people have their ways about them and don't feel that we as a government body should be flying individual flags. So whether we need to put it on the agenda to discuss it again in the future or what, I'm not sure. But That's my opinion at this point. And as far as any other communications, I haven't had it with anyone else in regards to anything about the community.
Okay. And I'll turn to Councilmember Rushing. So with the watchful eye of our city attorney to make sure that we don't go down too much of a conversational direction tonight. So far, I think I'm hearing Councilmember Robert being willing to potentially have that conversation, Councilmember Bright's providing information, And I'll turn to Councilmember Rushing to see where he might comment on having the discussion about raising other flags.
Thank you, sir. So I think something that keeps sort of getting into me is the concept that the pride flag is specifically a political flag. And that actually got me thinking a little bit deeper, because it occurred to me that by their nature, almost every flag on the planet is a political flag. You fly a flag because you have something to say, and that in and of itself is something of a political nature. And I think that as a city and as a government, it's important for us to have conversations and to be willing to bring groups in and support groups that the council, that the city thinks bring some sort of benefit to our community as a whole. So to that point, I feel that might be worth council consideration and city staff consideration to formalize and start a conversation about an official commemorative flag policy, so that moving forward, we have an actual process that I know that we don't have a lot of people coming to us asking to raise flags, but the more flags that we raise, I feel the more people may choose to have it. And I think that it might be with the best interests of our community involved to have a policy in place, so that as different flags come to our attention, we actually have a process that we can fall back upon and make an intelligent decision. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Bright, did you want to add any conversation about the agendizing of a potential flag policy?
Well, that's really why I brought this to my colleagues, to see if they had an interest in doing so. It seemed to me that it would not, I mean, I felt like it would behoove us to do so. I thought if my colleagues agreed, then sometime when our staff, you know, is when they don't have anything to do, then it might be something we could put on, on the list of things to do. The fact that we did have two people call, we had someone call in tonight, makes me think that there are other folks out there that have an opinion. What Daniel just said really made sense to me. The fact that, you know, someone has they have a flag, it obviously they have something to say. So I think it makes sense to me anyway.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Certainly. So I think from that perspective, I'm hearing, I'll call it qualified desire to have this as a conversation at a future meeting. So realizing it is not one of our highest priorities, because it's we get very limited amounts of requests for this. Perhaps the approach for this might be if there is a request that comes forward that staff makes an effort to either identify whether it's a permissible request or whether it's a request that needs the direction or input from the council in order to do that. So I don't think any specific time frame for agendizing this topic, but providing an opportunity for staff to receive a potential request and then bring it to us upon that referral. Are my colleagues in in conformance with that? Okay. Mr. Brunson, Mr. Hale, any concerns with that?
No, sir. We will have this on our radar.
Okay.
Not at all. And I'll work very closely with the city manager on the issue.
Very good. Then any other council communications for you, Mayor Pro Tem Bright? Very good. Then I'll turn to Council Member Roberts, see if there's any council communications that you want to share tonight.
No, thank you.
Very good. Council Member Rushing?
No, nothing additional. Thank you.
Very good. Then I just have two items. They somewhat can be related, the city manager did provide us today with an updated letter from Central Coast Blue, associated with Central Coast Blue from the city of Aurora Grande, whereby they took action last Tuesday to effectively reject our overture for having further conversations about Central Coast Blue, which is in accordance with what they had requested that we did, is what we did in our letters. So I think from that perspective, while there may be some disappointment in their approach and their methodology, I'm hopeful that there is still opportunities for additional conversations that are able to occur. And realizing it probably will be a topic of the South County Chamber State of the South County Breakfast that's coming up on Thursday. So just want to identify that the chamber is having its State of the South County breakfast at June 17th at 7 o'clock. It actually is going to be in person at the Inn at the Pier in Pismo Beach. And myself, Mayor Zwagi and Ray Russum will be there along with Supervisors Ortiz Legg and Compton to provide updates and take in-person questions. So we're actually going to be one of the first in-person gatherings that I'll have attended in a long time. So I'm anticipating that they will also televise it, because not everybody's going to want to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and join us for a conversation of the South County. But I will be there and will do my best to represent the city and all of the great things that that we are doing. And my preparation for that is to read and reread Mr. Bronson's city overview of the budget, because his budget narrative, because that is just a great document that came forward, and it tells all of the great things that we're doing. And I fully intend to give him credit and to talk through a number of those items on Thursday with that city overview document well in hand. So with that, let me turn it to our city manager for his reports and comments this evening.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council member. Just three items to close from my end. One is just to highlight the construction projects that are underway right now in our community. We have a light maintenance project on 23 different street segments that's happening across the city. Grand and Oak Park intersection improvements, including replacement of a outdated water line, pavement rehab that you're going to start seeing tomorrow, and a lot of other improvements. And we're doing this work at night so that we can avoid traffic at the most heavily used intersection in the city. So there's a lot of night work being done, thanks to our Department of Public Works for their work in helping to avoid conflicts. Also, we have water main projects that are going to start soon. So additional water improvements. Our 16th Street Playground project continues to move along. We had a bit of a delay in the final completion of the project because we have some parts that are waiting in the Port of Long Beach, along with a lot of other shipping containers. As you've read, the supply chain across the board is heavily impacted right now. So we are going to be delaying our grand opening until probably late July at this point, just to give us more time to complete the project and let the kids be able to test it out for a couple of weeks in a soft opening before we do our grand ribbon cutting. So stay tuned on that front. We have our new speed limit signs that are now unveiled across the city in areas where we have lowered the limits or raised the limits or just established limits formally. So those are now out there. We have roadway markings in place. Police is in a full force to be able to enforce these legally enforceable speed limits tied to a speed survey. And we'll make sure that we have the necessary traffic enforcement in place to help address any concerns. And lastly, I'll close with bike improvements. As you may have seen, we have our newest set of green bike lanes. So the first set of green bike lanes were on Newport Avenue. And now our second set of bike lanes are in the south part of the city along the Pike, from Oak Park Boulevard to South 13th Street. And they look beautiful. They really create a great demarcation between vehicles and cyclists. So more bike lanes are coming. Grand Avenue is coming next with our restriping work that we'll be doing here late summer or fall. So more to come there. And lastly, we have a great new bike rack that our staff team created that says, "I love Grover Beach" at 16th Street Park. We're going to be replicating these at other parks and city facilities, and also on West Grand Avenue, and launching an Adopt a Bike Rack program in concert with the chamber and local businesses to be able to have these wonderful bike racks across our community and help spread the love about Grover Beach across our area. So on that, I will go ahead and close. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that information. So next, I'll turn it over to our city attorney for any reports and comments he may have this evening.
Actually, I don't have any this evening. So
very good. Well, always good to see you, sir. Looks like we don't have any closed session this tonight either. We had that before the meeting. And so unless there's any other items that people want to bring up, we will consider ourselves adjourned until June 28th. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Good night. Have a good evening.